Welcome to Top Shelf at the Merrick Library with your host, Carol Ann Tack. Welcome back to Top Shelf at Merrick Library. And I have to say that of all the podcasts out there, you chose to spend it with us on your Top Shelf. And as always, I am grateful. So thanks to all of you for being here today. It is another beautiful spring day here in the suburbs. I'm looking out the window, and yes, there's sun. But that will change as we get rain the next 5 days. And I mention the suburbs because there is something about the lives of people who live in the burbs and the books that are inspired by them. I think of specifically The Wonder Garden by Lauren Acampora, The Fall of Lisa Bello by Susan Paraboo, and The Dogs of Littlefield by Suzanne Byrne. So these are this group of three books that I can't stop talking about. I do book discussions about them, and they really sort of capture the essence of living in the suburbs that I feel is beautifully done. And then, of course, you've got The Revolutionary Road by Richard Yates and Tom Perrotta's Little Children. Each of these books have grounded me solidly in their neighborhoods. I've walked their streets and seen the residents. I understand the enmity that exists between neighbors. I know the local coffee shops, the parks, and the schools. And as I said, all of these books are beautifully written. And thankfully to this group, I now add White Elephant by Julie Langsdorff. So from the first page, the reader is placed right smack in the middle of the suburban D.C. town of Willard Park, and particularly on Tunlaw Place. Suburban conflicts abound between the neighbors, and to say I was on the edge of my seat to see how these conflicts would be resolved is an understatement. Now, I have a bias towards these novels because, as I said about the group I mentioned, they are so beautifully done. White Elephant is honest, it's dark and joyful at different times, and absolutely perfect for book discussions. And I mean it. I'm going to exhaust all my book discussion possibilities with this one. The author of White Elephant is a debut novelist and today's guest, Julie Langsdorff. Julie's received 4 fiction grants from the Maryland State Arts Council. And her short stories and essays have appeared in magazines, including Lit Hub. We love Lit Hub. And Electric Literature. Having said all of that, if you're not exhausted, listeners, Julie Langsdorff, welcome to Top Shelf at Merrick Library.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
Please, I don't want to say too much because I'll just keep talking. Tell the listeners and the readers, tell us about White Elephant. Well, your inspirations, whatever brought you, how did you get here?
So White Elephant is about an established town on the outskirts of Washington, D.C., into which a developer moves, and he starts tearing down the quaint older houses and putting up what some people might call McMansions, and chaos ensues because those small houses were part of the reason some of the residents moved there in the first place. I started writing this book in 2005 when there were a series of articles in the Post and other papers about communities that were going through something similar. People were egging each other's houses and yelling at each other in the street and taking each other to court. And it was obviously a nightmare for the people who lived there, but for a novelist, it was kind of a dream come true.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of rich stuff there.
Definitely.
And it's interesting because I feel like we all have that experience at one time or another. You're driving to get somewhere. You're either going to a wedding or you're driving through towns to get wherever you're going. And you go through some beautiful suburban neighborhood and you're looking at these beautiful doors that grace these beautiful homes, provided we can even see the homes beyond the rolling lawns and the lengthy driveways. And we wonder who lives there. What do they do for a living and what are they really like?
I find it really hard to resist imagining those lives, because even those with seemingly wonderful lives, quiet lives, everyone's life has drama and everyone's life has tragedy in it. Everyone has everything. It's just the nature of life. And there are secrets and lies and dreams, but underneath it all, I feel everyone has an urge to connect with others. And that's what's true for the people who live in Willard Park, which is the fictional neighborhood in White Elephant.
One of my favorite reviews is from, and there are so many amazing, outstanding reviews for the book, is from author Jennifer Close, who really says it great. And she says, And I quote, "Langsdorff lets us peek into the windows of these cookie-cutter houses and eavesdrop on the residents of Willard Park as they gossip, seek revenge, and struggle with what it means to be a good neighbor. This debut is an absolute pleasure to read." Well, and then my other favorite is from Britt & Co., and it says, and I quote, "It's an urban planning face-off from hell as white picket fences turn into pitchforks."
Wow. Pitchforks, with I love that one.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing, especially the scene where Nick is shoveling the driveway, and there's that. That's what I thought of. As soon as I read the pitchforks, I thought, oh, boy, that's that scene right there. Yeah. So when you read these reviews, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that. Yeah, I think Jennifer has a lot of it right, especially about the struggle, because we all have different ideas about the best way to live. And when the person next door feels differently, it can lead to complicated conflicts. I tell the story from multiple perspectives, which gives the reader insight into what many of the characters are thinking and feeling. And I hope their perception of the characters will change during the course of the novel, and they'll get to see why they make the choices they do. And the reader might not always agree with those choices, but I really hope they'll understand them and that they'll reevaluate the characters and come to see the characters that they might have thought as the bad guys as maybe not so bad. And just as the good guys aren't always so perfect, so saintly.
Right. And I see one particular character in particular is Grant. And he sort of goes through some metamorphosis, although I feel like he's always been that guy that he is at the end of the book. And I'm not giving away any spoilers, but readers, you are going to want to read that, because the way Julie does this narrative by character and their changes as this situation in this town goes on is really brilliantly done. Really brilliantly done. And there are so many joyful moments in White Elephant. So like you said, you know, you try to live in your house and you try to live the best way that you can with the building that you're in. And you try to make your house look beautiful in a certain way. And then someone comes in next door, new owners, and they change the facade of your neighbor, your next door, and they build a fence or they do whatever they're doing, which causes a lot of angst and it causes a lot of stress. And I think you accurately portray that. I was getting a little stressed in certain scenes. So good on you for making me feel like, oh boy, I need a glass of wine right now. There are, as I was about to say, and I cut myself off, but there are so many joyful moments in White Elephant, despite all of the other things that are going on in the story. And these quiet, joyful moments sort of remind us as humans, as we're living in our days, you know, when you drive onto your street and the sunlight is hitting your house or your neighbor's homes in such a certain way, and it sort of gives you this, you're like, it's sort of, it gives you pause just to remember the things that are actually going well in your life. In the story, there's one beautiful scene in particular, which involves, it involves the Bay City Rollers and the Bee Gees. I'm not going to give the listeners too much context because they'll just have to read it. But the moment between the two brothers involving the Bay City Rollers and the Bee Gees, I mean, it brought tears to my eyes because it was such an authentic moment. What can you say about that?
Thank you. Well, in the story, there's one of the main characters, Ted Miller, has a developmentally disabled twin named Terrence. And in the scene that you're talking about, they're in the nursing home where Terrence works. And the two are very close, and they were raised in this town. And Ted wants to keep the town the same as it's always been for his brother, who doesn't do very well with change. Terrence was actually inspired by my younger brother, Kenny, who's developmentally disabled and the sweetest person I know. And he's the one person in the book that you can really count on to respond authentically to any given situation. And he's never gaming anyone. The same is true with my brother. And in the book, these two are really devoted to each other. And I'm in that scene, you really can see them just loving each other.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. And like I said earlier when we were off podcast, when we were just chatting, after I finished the book, I immediately went back and read that scene again. And it is so authentic and it is so beautiful. And of course, as soon as I saw, oh my gosh, the Bay City Rollers, and it's it's interesting to no one that I was a huge fan of the Bay City Rollers. Nobody cares. And when I was a kid, I had a poster of them. I had all their pictures and all these other things from Tiger Beat magazine, and which is so funny because there I am reading about the Bay City Rollers. And so just recently, for my Long Island listeners, I heard last week that the Bay City Rollers were here on Long Island. And I think it was just this past weekend out in Riverhead or some version of the Bay City Rollers. So when you think about this, there I am reading White Elephant. And then, Julie, you write about the Bay City Rollers. We booked the podcast, and the very next day there on the news is an advertisement for the Bay City Rollers on Long Island. So my mind was blown. Kismet. I thought, okay, this is all going to go. This is going to be a really fortuitous podcast.
All the signs were there.
All the signs. Tell me why you, Bay City Rollers and Bee Gees, what made you bring those into the story? I'm just curious, like, how you got there.
Well, partly Terrence, one of the ways that he really relates to his brother is by bringing up memories of their joint past. So they when they were growing up, those were popular groups. So they refer to their childhoods, and it's a way that they keep connecting.
Yeah, and it's a great connection. I mean, it connected me immediately to Terrence and the boys. Okay, so while you're on your book tour, I think you've already begun to do that. Is there anything that you were surprised to hear from readers, or something that you weren't expecting?
Well, I love it when readers come up to me and talk about the characters as if they're real people, because of course to me they are. So it always makes the reader an instant friend to be able to talk about our mutual friends. The other day, somebody approached me and was really angry at one of my characters and the choices that she had made. And she was really, you know, quite impassioned about it. And I listened, but I really wanted to defend the character. But I didn't. But it's a little bit like when somebody comes and criticizes your children. You just want to stand up for them.
And you, because I think from the reader's perspective, they're thinking, boy, you know, if this was my girlfriend, I would have said to her, why are you doing this? You should not be doing this. Do you really want to move back and or whatever the case may be? And of course, to you, it's like, well, they're my family.
And yes, and they do. I don't agree with every choice my characters make in this book, and I don't imagine readers will either. But I hope that readers will be able to relate to them and to understand why they make these choices, even if they don't agree with them. So there's a question I often hear these days about likable characters. And I can't say that my characters are always likable all the time, but I don't think most people are always likable all the time. So I really hope by getting into their point of view that they're just at least understandable.
Right. And I think that that's true. Every single person is flawed. We wouldn't be humans if we weren't flawed. So I think the way each of these characters grow and change throughout the book and make decisions and think, oh, man, maybe I shouldn't have done that. Or, you know, they respond to the information and the situation that they're in at the time. And it's, you cannot even say for a minute that you think to yourself, oh, yeah, I really should have handled that differently, or I wish I could have handled that better, but this is where we are. How do I move forward? And I feel that that's exactly what each of the characters has done. And it's funny, I was just talking to somebody the other day, and I said, you know, they were talking about, you know, I really just didn't like whatever book it was that we were talking about. And I said, well, did you not like the book, or did you not like the character?
Yeah.
Because I think that, so I feel like if you accept that these people who live in these beautiful homes, I mean, they're all human, essentially.
Exactly. And they're human.
They all have challenges, right? So how long has the book tour been on? Have you been around the country, or have you been locally on the East Coast?
I've been mostly local. I missed an event in Brooklyn because I was sick, but I have different things in different places coming up.
All right, that's great. Was that the one with Kate? That wasn't Kate Hope Day. Oh, I know.
Yeah, there are a few other debut authors that we've all become friends. And so sadly, I missed that one.
I can't wait. Yeah, it's funny because that night I was supposed to head into Brooklyn and I had an event that I was doing here at the Merrick Library and I wasn't able to go. So I was like, oh, darn. Another time, I'm sure. Are there any other plans to make it to the New York City area?
I'll be doing, not the city right now, but I will be doing the Southampton Writers Conference, and I will be doing an event at the Rye Free Library in October. So I will be in New York.
Okay, that's great. We'll try to see if we can coordinate that, and if I do a book discussion here, we'll see if we can get you to Skype into that.
I would love that.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Is there anything else in addition to what we talked about that you can say about the book? When you sat down to write this, was this sort of something, how did the characters reach out to you? How did these people speak to you?
Well, Allison was just lying in bed one morning and construction was going on next door. So I don't know where she came from, but there she was.
Unbelievable. Isn't that something? I love that. That's great because that's an authentic, you're sitting there and you, especially if you're laying, every suburban person knows exactly what it's like. You don't have to go in. You can go in a little to work a little bit later, or you're just sleeping in for whatever reason and you hear the gardeners next door. And so you go from hearing the birds to the blowers and all of that. So I, when she was sitting there listening to the construction, I thought, oh man, I know Allison.
I know her too.
Yeah, yeah. I hear you, Allison. I hear you. Before I let you go, is there anything you're reading now, or anything that you sort of would recommend to readers? Anything you can't live without? Authors that you love? Anything you can share with us?
So I finished Normal People recently by Sally Rooney, and I love that. I just started reading Claire Massoud's When the World Was Steady. That's my current read. I listened to Daisy Jones and the Six, which was, oh my goodness, you have to listen to that book. It's like theater. There's so many characters.
I read it, but I didn't hear it. Listen to it. So now that you're saying that, I feel like I'm going to have a brand new experience when I listen to it.
You have to do both, I think.
That's great. That's so funny.
And then I love some of the authors that you mentioned, Richard Yates and Tom Perata and Evan S. Connell. I love Elizabeth Strout. We were talking earlier about Olive Kittredge. And apparently there's another Olive book coming out this fall, which I'm thrilled about. I love Kate Atkinson and Anne Patchett. And the list is long and wonderful and so many great authors.
Yeah, and you're in this new group, this debut. I feel like winter of 2019 and the spring of 2019 has just bloomed with fabulous debut authors.
I've read so many great debuts, and the beauty of it is they've all become friends. So Kate Hope Day's If Then is wonderful, and Angie Kim's Miracle Creek, Whitney Schar's The Age of Light. They're just, oh my goodness, so many great books. It's really been a terrific, terrific time for me.
Yeah, it's, and for the readers as well, and for the librarian. So all we do is book talk constantly. So when we can sort of open up this bouquet of flowers and say to our patrons and our readers, look what we have for you. This is amazing. I also wanted to mention Etaf Rum's A Woman Is No Man.
Which I haven't read yet, but I want to on my list.
I was lucky enough to host her a few months ago, and the same with Angie Kim. Kate Hope Day, you're on my list.
She's lovely.
Yeah, I just feel like readers, librarians, patrons of the arts, all of you writers, I just feel like you're just like gifts to all of us because of this lovely crop of authors that's just made its way to all of us.
Oh, thank you.
So we're thrilled. I can't thank you enough for joining me today on Top Shelf, but I wanted to mention that you do have a fabulous homepage. I don't know who constructs it, who does it. It's beautiful.
Ilse Brink, she's an amazing web designer.
What is
her name? I love my page. Ilse Brink.
Oh, it's really fabulous.
Thank
when
you. Yeah.
When the mouse travels over the windows and the lights go on, oh my gosh.
Yeah, no, I it's my dream webpage.
Please tell her kudos.
I
was flipping, you know, sort of going around searching. I was like, look at how, and then I kept bringing my coworkers and look at the lights, they go on and that.
Oh, I love the lights.
Yeah, because that's like a goober thing for me. So listeners, you can find Julie Langsdorf on her homepage, and it's julielangsdorf.com. But I will provide all the links on the podcast page for episode 29. Julie, I really cannot thank you enough for joining me today on Merrick Library's Top Shelf.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed it so much.
It was really great. And of course, right, like I said, I will include all of the links on episode 29. I'll include a link for Merrick patrons to place your reserve. They copies are going fast. I've had to order extra ones, extra copies of White Elephant, so make sure you get your hold in today. Listeners, once again, as always, I thank you for joining us today on Top Shelf at Merrick Library. Remember to follow us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and wherever you find most podcasts. Don't forget to check out the Merrick Library website at www.merricklibrary.org. Special thanks, as always, to Merrick Library Director Ellen Firer and the Merrick Library Board of Directors for getting us off the ground and onto the airwaves. Until next time, remember to keep us on your top shelf. Thank you.